everyone, and welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. Thank you for joining us. My name is Peggy Ployer, and I am the host of this weekly broadcast put on by Sped Homeschool, as well as its founder and CEO. We at Sped Homeschool empower families to home educate children with learning challenges, and I encourage you to check out our website at spedhomeschool.com to learn more about the resources and support that we offer families. Some of the best resources we have on our website actually are our partners, and I'm excited to be showcasing one of our partners today, Kimberlyn Lavelle. Thank you for joining us and just taking some time to encourage parents and offer some of the wisdom that you have.
Thank you so much for having me, Peggy.
Yeah. So we focus on a different topic every month. And this month, we're focusing on resources that you can kind of get by just looking around. So free things, not cheap things, inexpensive, let's call it that. But today we're going to talk about how to improve your students' reading comprehension with books that you maybe already own, or maybe you can get them from the library or a neighbor, or like we said, just things that you can access rather inexpensively. And Kimberlyn has some great resources on this topic. So I'm super excited to dive into this topic. I'm going to share your website just because I want you to talk a little bit about yourself and what you do and why, your passion behind that. But Kimberlyn has a website called Decoding Learning Differences. And if you're listening on the podcast, just know that the website is actually yourparenthelp.com. So how did this all come about? And, you know, what's your passion driving helping parents of students with learning differences?
I would say my passion has always been in education in general. It's like my solution to every ill in the world. I think about like, well, if people were just more educated, then you know, we would have more peace and more. So education in general is a huge passion of mine. And problem solving, I guess, is another passion. So when I'm seeing, so I chose to become a special education teacher, wanting to help kids be successful and find that success for themselves and know that they are intelligent and they can become all that they want to become and really empowering them. But along the way, as a public school special education teacher, I kind of hit some roadblocks at times where I knew I was getting all that I could, but I knew that if things were a little different and they were able to not have to go to school every single day and sit in class from 8 to 10 before a 20-minute recess break and things like that, the constraints of school that I can't really work around for that they would do better at home being homeschooled on a different schedule or different curriculum, you know, following their interests more and some things like that. So I started seeing this, that there were some kids that just I knew would be better off at home, and yet the parents didn't feel like they could do that. So I wanted to start supporting parents in doing that and knowing that they can be successful. And I want, you know, my mission is for every child to have an individualized education that allows them to be successful and really meets their individual needs. The public schools are kind of limited in what they can offer. So that was why I started Decoding Learning Differences.
That's awesome. Yeah, we were talking earlier before the show, you know, it's hard when you have those constraints and kids are so different. And yet schools are set up to teach kids and lots of them, unfortunately. And a lot of our kids just don't meld well with even a group of three, let alone a group of 20. So, yeah, but it is a huge leap for parents to leave a system that that they can rely on for a lot of that help. And it is very daunting. And so I'm excited that there are consultants like you that we refer a lot of parents to, because some parents don't feel like they can do it on their own. They want somebody to come alongside them. And that's what the consultants that are listed on our website are there for. They're there to help you. They want to do that. So reach out to them. Reach out to Kimberlyn, and if you need somebody to walk alongside you and help you with that. So that's awesome. I'm glad that there are people like you that love to do that. And it's definitely not one of my strong suits. So I'm glad there are other people out there that just have that passion to help parents and just help them to realize what their students can do too. So we're going to talk about reading comprehension. And as we do that, I think one of the biggest questions I have for you before we get started is the complexity of reading comprehension. And why are so many students, or we find that so many students struggle in this ability to understand what they read?
That's such a great question, such a great place to start. It's because there is so much to it. It's, you know, I'll hear parents say, oh, my kid can't read or something. And they talk about reading as if it's just a single skill. But it really has so many components to it. And that comprehension piece means that they are reading something and understanding what they're reading, which requires that they have some listening comprehension skills already, because they can, like, what they're hearing, they're comprehending.
Okay.
And then they also have to have vocabulary to understand what the vocabulary is saying and what that meaning is. And also figuring out vocabulary if you don't know it. How do you use context clues or even just getting out the dictionary and things like that? And then there's the kids who are struggling to actually just read the text. You know, part of my job in the public schools is testing kids for for to see if they qualify for special education. And sometimes their reading comprehension score is low, but it's only low because they couldn't actually read it. You know, their listening comprehension is really high. And so I kind of can ignore the reading comprehension being low when I know it's just because they couldn't actually read that text. It was too high of a level for them. And that if I waste my time trying to teach them reading comprehension, I'm wasting my time, because for them, it's just the act of reading words, the actual, you know, the decoding and just fluent reading that is their struggle. But other kids will have really high reading scores and really low reading comprehension scores. And then that's a different picture, right? So there's all these different things that are happening. And part of it is just a processing where they just need more time with a text, with those words. They take a little bit longer to process that information. So, you know, one of the strategies that I always encourage people to start with is just reading things multiple times. Reading it twice, reading it three times, reading it four times.
Which drives us parents crazy. But yes.
I know. And that's one of the things I'll say is, like, toddlers have it right. They'll come up to you with the same book a million times. Every time we get, I've got little ones at home right now. And every time we get a new book, they want to read it. And then they want to read it again. And then they want to read it again. And then they want to read it again. And that's so that they can understand it. You know, they've got that innate wisdom as to how to build reading comprehension. It's just keep reading it until I get it. And asking questions along the way, like, well, you know, what's happening in this picture? How does that relate to the story? And so I see so much wisdom in my toddlers that I'm like, oh, they really do understand how reading comprehension happens and how to connect those pieces. So yeah, there's a lot of components to reading comprehension and can cause struggles. And a lot of times kids are struggling because of, like, a language processing, you know? So if they're struggling with reading comprehension and you haven't looked into a speech and language assessment, you might want to seek out a speech language pathologist and have them assess for language processing and see if there's something there that they can get some extra services and support, just even through, like, medical insurance can cover speech language.
That's some great insight. Yeah, it's so complex. And yeah, it's reading. Isn't it just reading? But yeah. It's not. I mean, I didn't even know what phonics was when I first started homeschooling. So I've come a long way. But yes, it's the whole science in itself of how to understand all that. And that is complex. And so, you know, as a parent who has a struggling reader who has trouble comprehending, what is the reasoning behind why we have to keep working on this skill? Why is reading comprehension so important?
I mean, just life skills, right? Like, it's about, we want to make sure that our kids can be successful in life. And one of those skills is when they get a new TV that they can pull out the manual and understand how to put the cables together, that they can go to a job interview and understand the application process, that they can read the news and understand what it's telling them, that they can also just read for enjoyment and have that pleasure that comes from reading the pictures in their mind. So it's all of that. And it's one of those things where we have to keep practicing it, and in very natural, casual ways we can practice it, but we want to keep making sure that it is being practiced so that as the text complexity gets harder, that they're keeping up with it. And that's where sometimes that vocabulary instruction needs to happen, as, you know, they're getting into more complex texts that there's words they don't know. They need to know how to figure those out so that they can understand what they're reading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, instead of just skimming over them and thinking they understand what they are, not really. And yes, everything goes out of context at that point. So, yeah.
I've had kids who they'll get to a word they don't know and they just like gibberish over it. And I have to like stop them. Like, it matters what that word says. It changes. It'll be like a bigger word. I'm like, it changes what you're reading. You can't know what's being read if you don't know what that word is. We need to take time to break it apart and look it up and find out what it means. Otherwise, you don't really understand what you're reading, and then what's the point of reading?
Right. You know? Yeah.
That's the words on page are useless if they don't have meaning to them.
Right. Yeah.
No one would read nonsense words all day.
Some might, but yeah, it's just not going to get you anywhere.
I mean, maybe for fun.
Yes.
Nonsense rhymes or something. But
if you have a boy who's 12, but. I can think of a lot of instances. Yes. So we have a comment from a viewer, and just know if you are watching on YouTube or on Facebook, just know that you can put a comment in the feed. If you are watching on our Facebook group, you do have to give permission to the group to be able to share what you're writing in the feed so that we can see it. And if you're watching on our, where you reserved your spot, on that platform, make sure that you click into YouTube to actually make your comment, because then we can see it. If you put it on that platform, I won't see it until after the show, actually. So, Diana watching on YouTube says, what would be the reason for comprehension for a hyperlexic child?
I'm assuming she's meaning like comprehension struggles there.
I would assume too.
So I'm guessing my assumption there is that they're reading words at a higher level than they're able to comprehend it. So it could be that they don't have enough vocabulary to be able to read what they're comprehending, what they're like reading. Or they're so excited about what they can read that they're not taking the time to actually understand what they're reading. And part of that is that like not having like visualization strategies, like, you know, and that's one of the things that I talk about in the guide, is that visualization strategy, making sure kids are visualizing what they're actually reading so that they can make that picture in their head and have an idea of what it is that it's about.
Yeah. Great. Diana also asked off of the YouTube channel, free resources to assess reading comprehension level. I know we're going to talk about assessments kind of towards the end. Is there anything that you want to share right now, or should we just hold off with that?
Yeah, I either way, it's the free resources that I know of tend to be with, like, a curriculum will sometimes have it built in.
Oh, yeah.
The assessments, mm-hmm. like, as part of it. And sometimes you can even do that before you buy the curriculum. You can, like, take a pretest and kind of see where your kid falls.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know of any good assessments to get a true reading comprehension level that will actually, like, give you a number. The more free way to do it is just have your kid read something and see if they understand what they're reading by having them talk about it and ask questions.
Would that fall under observing, like, a Lexile score?
Yeah.
Okay. Because we have some articles on our website about how to determine your child's Lexile score for free. So you might want to look up that. It's Lexile. If you do a search on the Sped Homeschool website, you should be able to find that resource. Yeah, like I said, I'm not, I know hardly anything about reading instructions. So I just know what I read. We have lots of cool blogs on our website, so I learn as I go. But
yes, yeah, Lexile would be perfect. So if you've got free ones, then that's perfect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, let's dive into some of these methods that families can use to improve reading comprehension skills. And I know if you're watching on our YouTube channel, Kimberlyn also already shared with me her download. And if you click on that link in the YouTube description, then you can enter your email in there and download that for free from her. And so she's going to go through some of these. I'm not sure we're going to make it through all eight of them, but... But that resource is there for you. And if you're listening to the podcast, just pop over to our YouTube channel at Sped Homeschool and find this video and pull it off of there. Awesome. So what do we need to do?
So yeah, that is the Octopus's Guide, 8 Powerful Strategies to Improve Your Child's Reading Comprehension. And the first one we kind of already talked about, which is the double read, like the need to just read things multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I put it in here because to me it was like almost like common sense. Like, well, of course you have to read things more than once, but it's one of those things that I know it because I know it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I've talked to other parents, like, oh yeah, that's a great idea. I'm like, okay, I need to make sure.
It's in yeah.
There. As a starting point, we need to make sure that we're reading things multiple times because we tend to do it naturally. Like if we read something like, wait, what? We go
right.
back and we
yeah.
reread.
Uh-huh.
So when our kids don't understand it, we start to panic that they don't understand what they're reading instead of saying, okay, we'll read it again. And so start there. Start with at least a double read, if not a triple or quadruple or, you
right.
know.
Right, yeah.
Have them read it multiple times. And that's easier with, like, short.
Right, exactly.
One of my suggestions is if you're reading like a novel with your child and you guys are kind of reading it together, or even if they're just reading it on their own, you could also play that the audiobook for it when you guys are driving in the car. So they've already read it themselves and now they're also hearing it again, kind of reinforcing it. And
never thought of doing something like that. Yeah.
And also, you know, if they were reading it all by themselves, now they're hearing how to pronounce those words that maybe they kind of fumbled over when they were reading it by themselves. So they're going to get that reinforcement of that comprehension. And maybe it's after they've completely read the book, or maybe it's, you know, they read a couple chapters and now you're going to listen to the first 2 chapters as they go. You know, you can do it either way. It can also just be as you're reading with them that you have them go back and reread the pieces that were a little confusing to them, or you offer to read part of it out loud. Then if you are trying to have a conversation about it and they seem confused,
right?
Okay, let me reread that section. And you're just reading it, but out loud. So then they're hearing it again. They're processing, getting that extra ability to process it. So,
right.
So yeah, we want to just make sure we're giving them enough exposure to the text that they have a chance to process that that language and comprehend it.
Yeah. I think we often think that our kids are just going to learn it the first time through, and that just isn't true. It's the more the repetitive instruction, the kind of the neurodevelopmental approach of let's teach, and then a little bit of test, because if you get enough in, the output will eventually come. It's just we have to make sure the input is there. And so, it is frustrating as a parent, though, to read over and over and over, because you will comprehend it the first time around. I just remember those books that I found like after my kids got older, and the pages were so worn because we read through those books so many times. But they had complex words oftentimes in them. And so they were great. I think it would have helped me to know, oh, I'm improving the vocabulary. I'm just not reading the same book over and over again.
Right.
So that's helpful for my mindset.
Yes, great point. Yeah, it definitely is helping in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
The next strategy is visualization. So this is what I was talking about, is like another key component that we have to make sure we're hitting is the purpose of reading. Is it's not just words on a page, because sometimes kids will be very proud that they just read that whole page and they have no idea what words they just read. They just know what it looks like to read and what it sounds like to read, that they, you know, point to the words and they say the words, and they might be perfectly 100% accurate and not have any idea what they just read, because all of their focus was on reading. And we need to make sure they have that connection of, you should be getting a picture in your head when you're reading words, especially as you're moving away from those picture books that give you a picture.
Right.
We want to make sure that if you're just given words to read, that you can have a picture in your head to go with it.
Yeah.
In the guide, I give an example of the fish swam in a fishbowl, and just taking a simple sentence like that and having them really talk about, what does that look like? What does the fish look like? What does the fishbowl look like? Asking them questions, so they kind of have to make some kind of a picture in their head in order to answer the question, because there is no right or wrong answer to that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's just about, what does it look like in your head with your picture? You know, what is that? Right. Because it can be, you know, is there anything else in the fishbowl? Are there any other fish in the fishbowl? Is there sand at the bottom or marbles at the bottom? Or and giving them time to just really reflect on that, so that they can just practice in really simple ways, making pictures in their head and making really detailed pictures in their head, so that they can reference that again and comprehend that again. And as they get into more complex texts, that they're not just stumbling over words they don't know, they're trying to go, wait, what is that word? What does it mean? How do I make a picture of that in my head? And they're really working on making that, making everything a picture in their head that they can understand. One of the other things I mentioned is, even when we're reading a recipe, we have an idea of a picture in our head, right? Like pouring one cup of flour in and putting in the two eggs. We've got to have that picture in our head of what that looks like to make sure that we are understanding what we're supposed to be doing.
Right.
So we've got to make sure our kids are doing that. And some kids have no idea that that's supposed to happen.
Until
you have that conversation with them and say, okay, but what does it look like in your head when you hear this? They're like, what? Getting them to really have those conversations and talk about it and visualize it, and know that there's not a right or wrong answer. It's just about their image in their head. And also, if you keep reading and now it says, you know, the orange tail of that fish, that they can adjust their picture. And it doesn't mean they were wrong. Yeah. It just means that their picture needs a little adjustment now that they have more information. And it swam through the fake plants. Okay, now that's in their head. You know, and just adjusting their picture as they read more about it. But that they don't have to read everything to decide what the picture is. They should have a picture to start with and adjust it as they go.
Right.
We want to make sure they're building that.
Exactly. Yeah, we had a question from a viewer, and the strategy you just shared, I'm sure, would be extremely helpful to her. She asked for recommendations for an intellectually disabled child who's taught himself to read at age 3, but finds it hard to comprehend and sequence events.
Fascinating. Taught himself to read at age 3. Okay.
So, yeah, I think a lot of things that you're going to be talking about are things that maybe she should, touch on.
Just keep listening. Yep. Hopefully all of you will help with that. So especially as we get into some of these other ones. So the next one is connect. And that's really about making sure that kids are having connections between things. And part of that is that building that background information, that background knowledge, the vocabulary part of it, and just making connections, because when we have those connections in our head, it's easier to understand what we're reading about. You know, like, I know nothing about the intricacies of how a computer works. So if my husband talks to me about it, I have no idea what he's talking about.
Right.
Because I don't have connections to that. And if he tries to then reference how it's related to like a car or something like that, it doesn't help. But if you relate it to something that I have more understanding of, then it's going to make it easier for me to understand and make and know more about. So
right.
If we're reading a book that has some characters in it, like, we're reading about something that with frogs in it, then I also want to make sure my kids know about frogs. I might have other books about frogs that they can connect to, and all those connections are going to be building up that comprehension. And I might also choose lead to how you choose what you want to read, is what connections you want to have, which is related to the next one, which is child-led choices. And so when we know about, when we're interested in something, it's easier for us to learn it and understand it.
Right.
The same thing with my husband can read about cars and understand it, and I could read the same article and have no idea. Part of that is I don't have those connections, those earlier experiences. And part of it is I'm not interested. I don't care how cars work.
Right.
It'll put me to sleep. But there's a lot of things that I want to read that he has no interest in and would be boring to him.
Right.
So, you know, we each have our own interests. And that's one of the huge benefits of homeschooling, is you don't have to follow a particular curriculum. You don't have to say, oh, no, now we're learning about this. Oh, you're interested in this? Then let's read about that. Let's explore that. Let's take time. And kids, and that's more important than like their Lexile level also, because a child who's has a low Lexile and is given a book at that level, but it's boring to them or uninteresting to them, will have a hard time understanding it. And it's an easier time reading something at a higher Lexile because it's interesting to them. They care about it. They want to read it. They're going to put in the effort to figure it out because they're interested. And then they're more receptive to your explanations about the vocabulary and anything that you're doing to help them comprehend it. So definitely always following the child's interests.
The interests. So, yes. Yeah. Nairu had said that, that made a lot of sense, what you said about the visualization. And then Amanda on Facebook had said, what are some visualization strategies or ways we can help an ASD child visualize what he reads? And my thought, as you were just talking about this last one, is kids on the spectrum are so into their niche likes. And so I know for my kids, it was, you know, anything that they were excited about is what, you know, we really helped them with visualization too.
Yeah. Yeah. And it can be just like I said, like starting very simple and one sentence at a time, but make sure it's a sentence that has something they can visualize and just have them focus on and ask them, what do you picture? What do you imagine? One of the other strategies that's related to that is my sixth strategy is art. And that's taking that visualization and putting it on paper, you know, draw out what the fish in the fishbowl looks like. And it might be that you know, depending on the level of the kid, you might just already have a fishbowl. You might have a few fishbowls they can choose from, a few fish cut out they can choose from, and then color in and put together. What does it look like for you?
Right.
And giving them that opportunity to physically make a picture that can represent something that they would also have in their head when they read that sentence and that it goes along with it. And also related to that is the next strategy, or after art, is the seventh strategy is acting it out. So they can read something, and then you can work on actually either you can take that responsibility and act out what that looks like.
Right.
Or you can invite them to do it. And you can do that in a lot of different ways. I mean, it can be like if you have a little toy fish and you put it in a little glass bowl and there's the fish swimming in the fish bowl. And should we add sand? Should we add plants? And talking them through that and you physically making a representation of what it is. It can also be that they're going to pretend to be a fish laying on this fish bowl that's represented by a blanket or their bed or the couch or whatever it is. That they can kind of act out what they're reading to kind of make that connection that way. That they're it's whole body experience,
right?
That visualization is getting out of their head and putting it, like I said, with the art one, putting it on paper, or I mean, even modeling clay or something like that. Like, it doesn't have to be drawing, but any artistic representation or acting it out. Those are both just reinforcing that visualization strategy with those other kind of like sub strategies in a way. Like, you know,
and I even found that for my kids, you know, as they got older, like history events, acting things out like that, it made it so much easier for them to comprehend because those texts are so dry. And it's like, okay, everybody off the couch, let's act this out. And it made it so much easier than me trying to reread it over and over again, and them going, I still don't get it, because they could not visualize it. There was too much involved in the whole process. So that is that's an incredible strategy to use. And I love the idea that you shared with, you know, like the modeling clay or the little even like their characters, like they may have favorite like superhero characters or whatever they love to play with, but having them act it out. Great ideas. We have another question. It's going to take us maybe a little bit off the top. For middle school, she said, are there any reading curriculum for middle school homeschooled kiddos who were once in level, but now have a slower processing speed and potential comprehension, depending on how the brain is operating that day? How don't we know that one? Some days are better than others.
I'm hesitant to ever suggest any particular curriculum because there's so many that are good for so many people in so many different ways.
Right.
But I would say it's more about just finding something of interest for your child. And I think that regardless of where they're at or where they were or what their potential is, it's just, I mean, keeping all of that in mind, not like disregarding it, but the biggest focus is where are they right now? What are they interested in right now? How do I use that to further their comprehension? You know, by following their lead and what are they interested in, and making sure that we're focusing on that as much as we can. And then the other strategies when we have to read about history and they are not getting it, that we can act it out or draw it out or.
What are your thoughts on high interest, low level readers?
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Those are excellent.
Okay. Cause, Lisa,
I mean, anything.
Lisa followed up with, how do I get my middle schooler to read more on his own opposed to him? Not exactly sure.
So he loves being read to.
Oh, yep. Mm-hmm.
But she wants him to do it more independently.
More independently. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean,
what are your thoughts on audiobooks?
I love audiobooks.
So
I was going to say, that's one of the strategies I would say is it's okay for kids to use audiobooks. It, you know, it's still fostering a love of reading, even if they're not practicing the reading skill. If that's where they're getting their comprehension from, it's still building all those right neural networks, at least for the comprehension part. And the biggest detriment to their reading is anything that drives them away from wanting to read. So
that is, gotta quote you on that one.
You have to read this. You can't listen to the audiobooks, and they're not Mm-hmm. Anything that gets them to not like reading,
right.
The audiobook is requiring all those same comprehension skills of understanding the language and visualizing something. You know, if it's that versus watching a movie, there's a lot more complexity to an audiobook where they're having to listen to it. I'm not against the movies either as another support, but it's just, you know, it is different skill set there. Whereas the audiobook is using that same, almost all the same neural networks as with the listening comprehension as with the reading comprehension. It just doesn't practice the skill of reading.
Right. But, yeah. Unless you have captions and you have a student that's very much following the captions with the movie and that's again helping with visualization. I found that out with my middle child. He had a hard time with the visualization part, and so reading captions with movies helped him to create visual strategies. And
very good.
It was kind of happened by accident.
So
one of our other listeners said join a book club, and I guess if you have a child who's motivated by like peer pressure, that might be a really good suggestion. Not all kids are, but yeah, for some. That's great. Thanks for sharing, Brandy. All right. So what else do we got?
The fifth strategy we kind of had skipped over is teacher time. And that's focusing on the child being the teacher. Because studies have shown that kids remember about 10% of what they're taught with instruction, visuals, you know, auditory visual input. They remember about 10% of it, depending on the kid.
Yeah.
And their strengths and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But most kids, people really, you know, any of us, we remember about 90% of what we teach others.
Yeah.
So as soon as you've, you know, given them an opportunity to teach something that they've read, it forces it into different parts of their brain where they're going to understand it and remember it better than if they just sat and read it by themselves. And there's a lot of different ways that they can practice teaching it. You know, they can teach it to everybody over dinner. They can teach it to the pet dog. They can, you know, teach it to their younger sibling, what they're just reading about, you know, especially if it's like something with like history and they want to share what they are reading and exploring. They might teach it that way. They might make some kind of a presentation if that's interesting to them. You know, maybe it got paired with, they did some art or they made a little play about it. So they're acting it out and they're teaching it all at the same time. And then the last strategy is YouTuber. And this is about them kind of making a video where they're explaining something they read and talking about what they read. And that's using that same philosophy of them being the teacher and sharing about something that they've read.
Yeah.
And that it's going to be way more enforced and it's something they're going to comprehend better. They're going to remember it better. And so both of those are using that same overall strategy of make them the teacher. Let them be in charge of the instruction and see what comes of it, which usually they get a lot more excited and interested. You know, you can be the student for them, like, okay, I want you to teach me, you know, what do you want to teach me about? And then they can choose a topic even, like they want to read this book about this and they're going to teach it to you. And all of that is building comprehension, not just of reading, but of I mean, it's the reading of whatever content they're interested in. So it can further a lot of different academic goals, science, history, math, anything that they're working on.
Yeah. Yeah. And what kid doesn't want to teach their mom something? I know more than you do. So yeah, that's a great strategy. And so many kids love to be on videos now. And I mean, you don't have to put it on YouTube, but you can still create a video. It can be a family video.
Yeah, that was one of the things I did mention, though. You don't actually have to put them on YouTube, but you can pretend like it's for YouTube. And there's some other ones that you can sometimes like get like a group of kids that they can send it to their friends and they can send it to each other. You know, it's kind of like a virtual book club in a way, or sharing of their own books that they've read. So that strategy is especially for slightly older kids, you know, I'd say 8 and up, that they can enjoy that, like, I'm on video and I'm sharing about and taking the lead of, you know, making their script of what they're going to say and making sure that it has all the important information. And you can kind of give them some guide to begin with, but then also letting them take the lead on it and see, see how things go.
Those are some great suggestions. And I, yeah, I absolutely love that, that last one. Videos weren't used that much, but I could see one of my children having loved me to sign that. The others not so much, but video skills are so important anyways. Now in this day and age, when we're on Zoom calls with business, you know, we have to prepare our kids for that. And what a fun way for them to talk about what they're learning. You're working on reading comprehension, at least that's what you're thinking about. They're just sharing something fun and having a good time doing it. So awesome. Well, we've got lots of comments and questions since we started talking. I kind of ignored them on the side here. Lisa said her hope was that her son would read chapter books, and you know, any encouragement there?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's hard because we want it for our kids, but if they don't want it, they're not going to benefit from it. So it kind of becomes about getting them to find that joy of actually being the one that does read it on their own. You can encourage it. But I would just always avoid anything that becomes a battle where they feel like something's being forced on them that they don't want, because then you're going to get a lot more resistance and a lot less appreciation of the reading process. So it's hard. There's, you know, a lot of adults just never really read books, and they do just fine with their audiobooks and their other resources. And it's, you know, it might not be what we would prefer for them, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. So we kind of have to be careful, as long as they are able to read, right? That they have that skill, and we're working on that as much as we need to and addressing that as needed, but it also has to get their buy-in, you know. And you might just share, you know, another strategy is just sharing with your child why it matters to you that they read books on their own, why that's important for you. And then just listen to what their response is and honor and respect what they're saying, because they might have, you know, they might just be like, it's just too hard. Or I just can't focus on it for long enough. Or, you know, they might have some valid reasons. And then maybe you can have a conversation where, okay, I'll read one chapter if I can then listen to the rest of it as an audiobook. And, you know, having some kind of compromise if they're willing to just, but it all comes from that conversation, and then asking them for their thoughts and their strategies too. And, and see if you get buy-in. And before you suggest, well, what if you do this? And then ask them for their input first. And what is it that is causing that resistance?
And she even said later on that they're probably, he's just not motivated, or maybe too challenging, she said. And so that's a good perspective to have, is that when we think reading's easy, it's not always perceived the same way from our children's perspective.
Yeah, and especially, I can't remember if she said at any point, but especially if they have difficulty with the reading skill, you know, if decoding words is difficult for them, or even if it's like an attention span thing, that it's hard for them to focus on a book for very long.
Right.
Then sometimes we have to, it's, you know, fatiguing. Reinforce those skills at a separate time.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and I always had in the back of my mind with my oldest, he didn't learn to read till he was 12, was I wanted him to love books, whether it was audiobooks. I just wanted him to enjoy literature. And so every time I caught myself, am I doing this to make my child love books or to make them hate them? And am I reaching my main goal by doing what I'm doing? And so, yes, I mean, we taught reading skills until he got it, but it was very slow because that's all he could handle. And yeah, it's kind of the way you have to do it. So, yeah,
exactly.
We have one viewer who said that her son has never liked to read. The only thing that makes him want to learn to read is to read his video games. You've got a motivator right there.
Yes. Yes.
So
yes, and nothing is better than that intrinsic motivation. You know, when they want it for a purpose, that's where they'll get it. Yeah. And that is definitely not the first time I've heard that.
They'll
read for the video games. Okay. Take it.
Yeah, we had a comment by one viewer about visual novels, and then another one asked, where do you find visual novels? And so she commented again, just saying Steam has quite a few various video game consoles. But I'm thinking graphic novels. Is that kind of that same?
So I was thinking graphic novels, but then when they said Steam, I know that's like a video game.
That's a video game
platform. So I'm wondering if it's like more of a like a video representation of a novel. I'm not really familiar with the term visual novel, so I'm going to have to look that one up.
Right.
Graphic novels, for sure. A lot of kids like it, and parents will be like, oh, no. And I'm like,
yeah. My kids read a lot of anime, which is more of the graphic novel.
Yeah.
And some of them are really big. So they're quite avid readers, but they read things that are not interesting to me, but that's okay. They're reading, you know, that's what I think that's the most important thing is they're interested in the stories. They talk to each other about them. I've got three kids that all read them and they get involved in the stories and it's the culture of their age. Yeah. And so, yes, they did appreciate good literature when we were doing school, but yeah, they've got their own opinions now. So,
yeah.
So yeah, we'll have to definitely learn more about those, the visual novels and how those might be helpful too. So if you want to get a recap of all those, Kimberlyn did share a link on the YouTube description that I have for this video, this live that we're doing, and if you're going to watch it recorded, to get a recap. And she has some really good examples you walk through. It's a quite a bit of a handout. How many pages is it? I'm looking at it right now in front of me here. Like 11 pages. And then you've got little videos and podcasts to go with each of those two. So lots of really good content to kind of go back over that. But yeah, this has been extremely helpful. And thank you all for your comments and your questions. I'm glad that we were able to dive into some of those too. And Lisa said, thank you both. We've got just about 10 minutes left and I want you to be able to share with us, Kimberlyn, just what you do at Decoding Learning Differences and just how parents can tap into your other resources.
Yeah, so I have a weekly podcast on Mondays. It gets released at 12:34 p.m. Pacific time. I like numbers, so 1, 2, 3, 4 Pacific time. And I go into a lot of different, like, just they tend to be short episodes and just strategies for helping kids, and motivating kids is a big focus this year. You know, getting into a variety of strategies for teaching kids different things. So that one, free resource, Decoding Learning Differences, that is. I also always do a video version because I believe in multimodal learning. So there's a video version, there's the audio, kind of like this, you know, video. And then I also have a lot of free resources there, you know, including the download that we were talking about today, the Octopus Guide to Reading Comprehension. I recently also created a free little quiz for, is your child dyslexic or how likely, because I'm not diagnosing, but some red flags to look for whether or not
your baby can learn. That's helpful.
And then I have the consultation services that I offer. I can work with parents one-on-one, teaching them how to teach their kid and helping them problem solve is a lot of what it comes down to. Is we're having these calls and they're saying, oh, I don't know what to do about this. You know, we're trying to work on writing and she just doesn't want to write ever. And this, you know, but she's great at reading and, you know, and I love it because almost every conversation is different. And I I often don't repeat myself in terms of like, with this family, I'm going to suggest this, and with this family, I'll suggest this, and with this family, I'll suggest this, because it's different pieces. And a lot of times, like, I kind of almost surprise myself with what I'm saying, because I'm like, you know, it's all based on the same underlying information that I have about, like, how kids learn.
Right.
But then it's pieced together with, well, but this child needs it this way, and this one needs it this way, and well, what if you did this because they like this thing? And, you know, putting all those pieces together is so fun for me, and I love it so much.
That's awesome.
So I have all of that. I also just recently started a, like a dyslexia-specific program where I can, it's kind of a hybrid tutoring consultation. So like I tutor virtually for about 10 minutes, and then I'm going to consult with you so that you as a parent can keep going with those strategies and can take over that instruction. So it's kind of like if you feel like you need a little help getting going with getting them on the right track and understanding how to do it, or maybe even getting their buy-in into being interested in it.
Exactly.
Get that buy-in and be like, yes, actually, I do want this for myself. So helping to kind of get that going. And then as a parent, the reason I really wanted to offer this is most, like, dyslexia specific tutoring is about a half hour to an hour once or twice a week. But kids have a hard time attending for more than about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So it can be hard for them to really benefit, but 10 minutes three times a day can be way more impactful.
Yes.
So if a parent is taking over and they're reinforcing those skills multiple times a day, multiple days a week, now the kid is going to make so much more progress, so much faster.
That makes so much sense. And
they can do it as they're making dinner. They can be practicing a lot of these skills. And as they're going for a walk, you know, a lot of it is like phonemic awareness stuff that they can do. They don't have to be sitting down to do it. So I kind of walk through like, I'll get you started, and then I'm walking through the parents how to how to help them. That's the newest thing I started offering.
That's awesome. And it takes into perspective the student's struggles too, which I love, because there's a lot of good strategies, and we can keep teaching and teaching and teaching, but our kids do shut down, and they shut down quickly. And and so to have a strategy where mom and dad can feel comfortable in using those strategies and being repetitive. I mean, that's the wonderful thing about doing therapy at home too, and continuing therapy services beyond just the therapy place where you go. Because it's frequency. It's how much you're doing it makes the difference. So awesome.
Absolutely.
Well, great. And if you're listening to the podcast, the website is Decoding Learning Differences, but the URL is yourparenthelp.com. So you want to check that out and connect with Kimberlyn if you think that some of the things that she talked about, you want to take advantage of, because that would be very cool. And it's a good resource that you're offering. And so thank you for being available and sharing just what you know with families that want to help their kids. Awesome. Well, we're going to continue with this theme one more week as we finish off March. And my guest next week is going to talk about using everyday activities to increase phonological awareness. I can say that. And so he's actually come up with a very unique way to teach reading. He is from overseas. He said the time was fine. So we're going to stay the same time as normal. But then later on in the week, next Thursday night, we're actually doing another broadcast. And it's how to, using activities to determine your child's therapy needs. And as we dive into learning on the go for next month, but I'm actually having surgery the first week of April. And so I'm putting two broadcasts in one week, so I don't have to do one the next week. So we're gonna do that next week, and then I'll have a week off, but the podcast will come out still each Sunday. So, but anyways, you'll want to stay tuned for both of those things, and we're excited. Check out too our blogs this month, because like Kimberlyn talked about, you know, she has that one, this one freebie here. We have freebies from our partners in every blog that's come out this month of March. And so you kind of get a compilation. I went through every single one of their websites and found all the free stuff and put it onto blogs that are coming out this month on our website. So you'll find resources like helping your child with reading comprehension, to free assessments, to anything. There's a lot of good information out there that our partners have created. So you'll definitely want to take advantage of those. But thanks, Kimberlyn. It was just a joy to be able to interview you and hear all you had to share. You're just a wealth of information. So thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Peggy. It was a lot of fun. And I loved all the interaction of the questions and comments and all of that was great. And I've got things I want to look up.
Yeah, exactly.
Learn some stuff myself. I love it. And I'm so excited about some of the things you're talking about coming up that sounds so great next week. I'm looking forward to listening in and hearing what they have to say about that, because yeah, those are passions of mine, but I want to know what they're saying.
What everybody else, I know. Learn so much when I do this show. So I always look forward to the conversations because I never know what I'm going to learn. And it's exciting. And Barb, who's watching on YouTube, said, thank you, Kimberlyn and Peggy. Love this. Students definitely have their own pace in learning. Meeting students where they are with regard to processing speed is a key component. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Barb.
Somebody who has a slow processing speed, I completely agree. So awesome. Well, thank you all for joining us. For our viewers, we love you. And we just are excited that you want to be part of this conversation. And so, yeah, we can't wait to see you next week. And definitely make sure you check out Kimberlyn's resources at Decoding Learning Differences or yourparenthelp.com. So thanks, everybody, and have a great week, and we'll see you here next week.
Scripture and brain science agree. Meditating on God's Word transforms us and reduces stress in our lives. I'm Jody Nisnik, host of So Much More, Creating Space for God, a scripture meditation podcast. And each week I give you space to hear God's word, listen to the Spirit, and pray about what's on your heart. And then we have a thoughtful conversation with guests to help us go deeper. Listen and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.